Megan, you know what I love about our partner, the Essential Calendar? I love the product so much, of course, but I also love that it comes from a small business founded by two moms.
Right, just like us. Listeners, if you're drowning in details right now, like summer camps, travel plans, end of school year mayhem, give yourself the gift of the Essential Calendar, a seasonal, at-a-glance, poster-sized calendar for your wall. Get 10% off your order at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour. That's 10% off at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour.
Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 124 of The Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. And today we are talking about how, I don't know, the world just seems to be kind of falling apart at the moment. And yep. There is a lot going on and has been for a while. And I know that that is something that can become really overwhelming. And I guess we're here to just kind of talk about taking care of yourself a little bit. During this, wouldn't you say, Sarah?
Yeah, and just sort of, I really want to talk today about how much news we take in, how we process the news. I mean, we have had quite a month. We are recording this in mid-October. We'll touch on some of the things that have happened in the last month in the world and in our country. But even if you're listening to this a year from now, there's most likely something going on in the world or in your life. So we're going to talk about, taking care of yourself, continuing. You got to put one foot in front of the other as a mom, especially if you have little kids who, you know, are demanding your attention. But I think we also need to talk through how much of the news headlines can we consume and how do we consume them? And maybe some small tips or action that we can take to, I don't know, do that in a way that allows us to put one foot in front of the other. It's not easy.
Yeah, that's true. And also to feel like you're making a difference and being proactive in a way that actually is helpful. And I know that when things are going really badly, my first inclination is to just sit and scroll and consume and not, you know, and then feel more and more helpless and angry. And it's really, it's kind of productive. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't help me be able to be a more positive influence in the world. And it doesn't really help anybody to do that. So, but I think it's very natural because it's so overwhelming and we don't know where to start. So we can also talk about taking action, like what requires, like what warrants you to take action on it. And if you have discovered or I guess figured out that thing that does, how do you go about that and not feel like you have to take every single thing on, because none of us can. So so this is a big one.
It is. Yeah. And I want to acknowledge too that some of our podcasting friends, I feel like this is sort of one of those collective times when people just feel the need to talk about this stuff. So we'll link up in the show notes, but some other great podcasters have done similar episodes lately. And I think it is because it's hard to kind of move forward with our general topics, motherhood and parenting and family life, without kind of acknowledging that life is kind of intense right now. So
okay, Megan. Well, over here at the Mom Hour, we are big fans of our sponsor, Our Place. In fact, you, me, and our team member, Katie, were all comparing notes on our favorite product. Katie was telling us that even though she's packing up to move her family to a new house, she cannot put that mini perfect pot from Our Place into the boxes yet because she's using it like every night.
Well, as someone who also has a perfect pot, I got mine as part of their mini home cook duo set. I get it. It's nonstick, which is key, but it also has all these handy features like a steam release lid with a built-in strainer and this nice beechwood spoon that nests on the handle in this perfect little peg.
Okay, well, I didn't get this pot, but now I want it. That sounds so great. Our Place's cookware is great to cook with, beautiful to look at, and healthier for us as well. All of Our Place's products are made without PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. In addition to their cookware and tableware, Our Place is also making waves with their Wonder Oven, the most stylish all-in-one air fryer and toaster oven. Again, free from the forever chemicals found in many of those air fryers.
Listeners, Our Place offers a 100-day trial with free shipping and returns, and we've got a great deal for you. Go to fromourplace.com and enter the code MOMHOUR at checkout to receive 10% off site-wide. That's fromourplace.com, code MOMHOUR.
Megan, the end of the school year and kickoff to summer is a busy time of the year for families, but we can all eat stress-free and hit our wellness goals with ready-to-eat meals from our sponsor, Factor.
Factor's delicious meals are never frozen and can be ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can pick from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular choices like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Plus, they have more than 60 add-ons like breakfast, lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you fueled all day long.
So our team was comparing notes recently on our favorite Factor meals, and Katie loved the herb-crusted chicken with mashed cauliflower and toasted almond green beans. I loved that one too. And get this, so did her little boy, Charlie. She heated it up for lunch one day, and Charlie, who's 3, ate almost all of the green beans. I mean, that's quite an endorsement, right?
I was going to say, what a parenting win. And I get it, Charlie. Those green beans are crazy good. And if you really want to treat yourself, they even have meals with filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Listeners, head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code MOMHOUR50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MOMHOUR50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Right back into it. So I had to write this down because I almost like couldn't even remember the things that have been happening for the last month. And if you are listening a year from now, you'll remember the, you know, fall 2017. So we had hurricanes and flooding, Harvey and Irma, that wreaked havoc on Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, the entire Caribbean, and other affected places. We had a catastrophic shooting in Las Vegas beginning of 2 weeks ago now. I'm losing track.
Yeah.
Or beginning of last week. And then, you know, we have ongoing fears about global issues, terrorism, rising tensions with various countries around the world. We have a political climate like we've never seen before. So
it's crazy.
It is a lot.
And it's funny because when I look at that, like that's a snapshot of this just this last month. The month before that was equally crazy. Like I just feel like it's just been adding. I mean, that was I think the month before that was Charleston. I feel like that.
Yes.
Like went right into the hurricanes. It's like one major event after another. And it just feels like they just keep coming. These are hard times.
And I
want to recognize that. Like I do not want to gloss that over. I'm not going to get political in this episode necessarily, but I have pretty strong opinions about some of the things going on. And that makes it even harder. Like, because you do, because there's anger then. It's not just.
There's anger.
Not, yeah.
yeah.
You're
there's
not just
fear.
Upset. And you're also like pissed off about it. So,
agreed. One thing I didn't write down is this is different, but the Harvey Weinstein sexual abuse allegations going on right now in the entertainment industry is upsetting, really upsetting. Yeah. So anyway,
it feels like no matter what your trigger is, there's something for everyone right now. So
I wanted to start with a question is like, cause you and I are kind of opposite personality types in a lot of ways. I was curious, how do you know when this type of a climate is affecting you? Like what do you notice? I know you're someone who feels things more physically than I do and more emotionally sometimes. So what does that feel like for you when you notice that this is starting to pile on?
You know, sometimes I don't even notice. I don't even recognize that it's about that. So like what I end up doing, and this is a good example, like 2 weeks ago, I want to say, that was when the Las Vegas shooting, I believe, happened. I don't even know. I'm losing track. And I spent way too much time on Facebook, like reading through people's reactions. And then what ends up happening is it starts to pile up. So not only do I feel anxious and angry and sad and helpless and all those things, but then I start to not take care of things I need to take care of. Like I don't go work out. I don't stay on my work schedule the way I need to. Like I just, and then that adds a lot of stress too.
Right.
And so that's how I feel. Like just, it ends up feeling like stress. And it also feels like this very impotent feeling like what I really want to do is sit up and fire a whole bunch of really angry Facebook posts off. And I know that's not helpful.
Yeah.
So I try not to do that. But then I just feel like I'm not doing anything. And it's just this vicious cycle. So like anxiety, high anxiety.
Yeah. I would agree. One thing I noticed, and I was like acutely aware of this, I think last week, is I start to absorb the world events almost as if they are like on par or in the same category as like other stressors in my life. So on the I mean, and they are in a way, because it's a sort of global environmental stressor. But I noticed, like, we had a website issue. Our website went down actually twice, two different times. And that was stressful for me. It was affecting, you know, our podcasts and all of that. And like, it was around the same time as one of these kind of major events. And then something was going on. The kids were sick. And like, in my mind, it was like this laundry list. And I really had to step back and be like, okay, there's things that are like globally important, but not immediately affecting my life in this minute. And then there's things affecting my life in this minute that really aren't that big a deal in the grand scheme. But does that make sense? Like, it's almost like they get all thrown into a soup pot.
Everything gets like conflated
and I can't sort out like what to focus on.
What requires action?
What requires immediate action? Yeah. And of course, it sounds, I hope it doesn't sound like callous to lump all those things together, but that's the way it felt in my brain is like, wait, what am I like, what do I even
do
right now?
I have
like, what am I upset about? That's what it feels like, which is, so I guess, I don't know, for both of us, probably slowing down and kind of letting yourself feel those feelings. Is probably a good thing.
Well, and the other thing, the other danger, I think, when I get to that point, I'll get to a point where I'm like so overwhelmed, so anxious, so mad that I realize I have to stop and then I numb out.
Yes.
So like I can tell too when I've gone too far or like when I've taken too much in is that I stop caring about anything. Like I just turn it all off. And that's not good either. Like we are global citizens. We are, you know, our neighbors. Like we can't just shut off. Like I can't stop caring if there's another shooting, you know, that like that is something that requires me to know and think about it and care. And I do find that when I don't take care of myself in that way, I do kind of flip, like I'll flip a switch at one point and just go numb. And that's not good either. So it's very difficult.
It is.
I feel like I hope that this entire episode isn't just us saying it's very difficult, but it really is very difficult.
It is.
I want to acknowledge that like you're not overreacting if all of these things are really affecting you and maybe you don't even recognize or realize that they are.
And I want to go into that numbing effect because I'm going to say something that is maybe unpopular or maybe I'm just weird. But after the election of 2016, I completely shut off. I mean, everybody said I had to step away from the news. I mean, I literally did not or could not consume any kind of news media, not TV, not Facebook headlines, not like a quick update of the headlines. And I stayed completely off Facebook and Instagram as apolitical as Instagram is for months. I mean, I want to say like 5 months off of Facebook, except for work. Wow. I never scrolled a feed. And I don't know that it had the effect that I thought it was going to. And that's the part that may be like unpopular or maybe I'm just weird. But I think that numbing, I thought that stepping away would somehow like let me clear my head and then I could ease back in with very deliberate choices of the kind of news I want to consume. But the world is so weird right now that there's not like a digestible, there's not like one smart New York Times think piece that will help us sort it all out. It truly is flying at us at a speed that is. So little by little, I got back in. I tried to start getting a little bit more informed. I was feeling less afraid, less sad. And I'm not sure that it feels any different. Isn't that weird? Like, I feel like that should have had some kind of epiphany for me. And I'm not sure that it did. So now I'm back to normal social media consumption. I do think that scrolling too much does add to that numbing feeling, exactly like you say. And I think a lot of our listeners will relate to that. I'm just not sure how to solve that. Do you know what I mean?
Because Sarah, the reason that stepping away, if I could make an assumption, didn't really have the effect that you hoped for is because it's not other people's reactions to things that are stressing you out. It's that things, crazy things are happening every single day. So you can't really, I mean, they are, it's just a fact. And no matter what you do, even if you're not taking in social media, you're finding out about it one way or another and you're seeing it around you. And it's, it's not escapable.
Yeah.
I agree too that like scrolling too much is bad, but on a day that I do, you know, my typical Facebook or whatever consumption, I don't feel any worse or better than the day that I skip it entirely. It's just the world is just what it is right now. And that there's kind of like no escaping it. That just sounds so like it just that sounds really bleak. And, but it's just a fact. And I will also say we talked about this a little bit. You know, the fact that many of our listeners have young children. And when I had young children, I remember feeling all of this stuff like even like tenfold. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't, I remember when Jacob was a baby was when there was that anthrax scare. Mm-hmm. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And there wasn't
social
media.
Well, he was born pre-9/11, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was born several years before
that.
So
you had two little kids on September 11th.
I had two little ones. Yeah. Four and two, I want to say.
Yeah, which is where a lot of our listeners are.
Yeah. And those events, but even something minor, like, okay, so starting with the anthrax thing, like, I knew I wasn't going to get anthrax, you know, like it really wasn't going to happen. But it's still, I was so much more afraid than something relatively small because I had a baby to take care of. And then when 9/11 happened, you know, again, there was no social media. I had a forum. I remember there was a forum that I was posting in that day, but mostly I just watched TV.
Yeah.
And just like everyone else in the world. And I think that having little kids compounded it so much. I remember having these feelings like, what would I do if there was an emergency? How would I get these two small children? And like, what would, like, putting myself in the shoes of someone with little kids in that environment and thinking about how terrible and stressful and awful it would be to try to protect your little children. That was like, that made everything that much more compounded. I do feel like now that my kids are older, and I don't know if this is hopeful to people listening or just kind of sad, but I feel like the older they've gotten, the more I'm able to go, okay, like I'm responsible for all of their safety, but I'm not responsible solely for keeping one of them alive. They can all run and walk and like, you know, it's just a different feeling. And even if something isn't directly threatening you, there's that fight or flight response. And if you've got little ones that you're also responsible for, it's like it triggers that someplace where you don't even consciously know what you're afraid of. You just, you know, your job is to protect these people.
Yeah.
And you could end up in a situation where you don't know how you would do that. And I remember when my kids were really little, it was so much even worse than it is now. So now I feel like it's on a bigger, like more universal scale. Like my world has expanded. So instead of being like hyper-focused on protecting my little group, it's like, oh, well, how do I be a good world citizen?
Yeah.
You know? So it's a different,
it is,
it's still a big issue, but it doesn't feel necessarily as, just as like, right now urgent.
Yeah, like that immediate threat. I know exactly that feeling that you mean. I wanted to ask you, because I feel like this is something you're better at than me. When you are, let's just stay with scrolling Facebook for a minute, because you do it, I do it, and I'm going to guess some of our listeners do it. I feel like you are better than I am about seeking out some longer form articles and really sort of like diving in. I feel like I get a little callous about the quantity of things being shared. And like you said, with the numbing, the effect of that on me is I start to think, well, every news outlet has an agenda. Every person sharing has an agenda. And so I often don't click through and read anything all the way through. And I don't think that's good. I feel like from what I know of you, I feel like you're better at seeking out a few longer form articles, reading them, and then sort of forming your opinion. Do you feel like that's true?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I'm good at it. I think that my immediate, and we can get into this as well, like the pressure to form an opinion immediately now is like never before. That is something that I think is unique to this era and this time of life, and especially social media has definitely exacerbated it. I resist that. I don't like to form opinions quickly, even if I can look at something and say, like, on the surface, I can see what's happening here. Like, I know what this is. And a good example of that is was Charleston. I mean, I'm looking at this, I'm like, okay, these people call themselves white nationalists. I know what that means.
Right.
It doesn't take, you know, it doesn't take a lot for me to put two and two together here in my head and figure this out. However, the pressure to then have something to say about it was where I balked. And it was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give myself a couple of days and read articles and figure out what's happening so that when I do speak, what I say has an impact. Because right now there's so many voices and so many opinions and so much out there. And people do tune it out. People, that's why people retreat to their corners and only go to what they know to be true, or what they think to be true. And then they find the opinions that confirm their biases. And I don't want to be that person.
Right.
I'd rather, you know, I know that my, like my Facebook friends group is very diverse. It's people that I've worked with on both coasts. It's people I went to high school with. It's people that live in my little, you know, like my little conservative neck of the woods. And then people from, literally the completely opposite side of the political spectrum. And I see the way people get in their corners and stay there. And I don't want to contribute to that. But at the same time, I need to speak my truth. So I don't know. I guess I'm not sure I'm answering that question, except that it is, I try to read intelligent people that I trust taking something apart and looking at all sides and then letting myself have a little bit of time before I say, do I agree with what they said? Do I think they had some valid points that I don't agree with all of it? What do I actually have to say? Do I have to say anything? And is it my job to say something about everything? And
I feel like you're very in tune. I think you're good at listening to yourself. So I like what I hear you saying is that you seek out trusted sources, but you also allow kind of your own reactions to sort of, you know, develop over the course of some time and trust your own opinions. I think one thing that happens with the quantity of information available, someone like me who thrives on information and detail, there can be pressure to sort of understand all sides to everything. And then the flip side of that is if I don't fully understand something or the argument that's going on or the nuance, then I feel unqualified, not just unqualified to say something, but almost like unqualified to think something. Does that make sense?
No, Sarah, we're very alike in that way. I mean, I think that was one of the things that you and I haven't had in common early on as in our writing careers, like when we met, is that we both like obsessively looked for all sides of every issue. And, you know, that's why I think I've gravitated toward things. I'm not a policy junkie. I don't really understand the ins and outs of healthcare reform. I almost feel like some of those things are engineered so no one gets it. Mm-hmm. So no one truly understands it. But that's like a good example of something like I don't really understand. I don't really understand how politics work on a real thorough basis.
Yeah.
So I tend to gravitate towards issues that to me should not be political. Like, to me, one that I return to again and again is racial politics, because to me, that's not politics. To me, that's just being a good human being and looking at the world and putting yourself in someone else's shoes. And so for me, it's very easy to look at something like that and say, I might not know every single fact, but as a human being, I can look at this story and say, this is wrong. This outcome should not have happened. It doesn't take a huge stretch of imagination for me to see how things are and to know that just because I haven't experienced something doesn't mean other people aren't experiencing it. To me, all that takes is imagination. It doesn't take in some compassion and empathy. It doesn't really, I don't have to know the ins and outs of every single story. I just need to know what the experience is of people who keep telling me what their experience is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that one's easy for me. Something like dissecting a tax code. Mm-hmm. I am unqualified to speak about anything except for my experience, which is I've been self-employed for a long time. And I know that things like rising costs of healthcare make it very difficult to continue to live a reasonable life as a self-employed person. So those are just like two things that I can kind of speak to my experience, but I really can't, I don't really get the ins and outs of it. And so I don't know if I'm even making
much
sense, but I think it's okay to feel unqualified about things you're not really that well versed in. And I think what's scary about this time is that people who have really no business acting like experts about things do anyway. And it becomes very confusing because you don't always know how to separate the people who actually know what they're talking about from the people who just sound like they know what they're talking about.
And social media has its own like customs and norms. And one thing that makes it very unlike real life is the quickness with which it's possible to reply with a counterpoint of view. So like if we were having a glass of wine with like some of your friends from your small town and some of my friends and a very mixed group of people, even if this stuff did come up and tough stuff should come up, I think sometimes we avoid it too much in real life. Yeah, and then we like go to the other extreme online. But if stuff came up, there isn't like you can't instantly post a link to an article with a differing viewpoint or like Google something. Like you have to really be more authentic and say, I'm not really sure of the facts, but here's what I felt when I saw this on TV. Or so one thing I'm glad we ended up here because we didn't really outline this episode very much detail. But one thing I wanted to bring up is I do find it a little strange that I don't feel like I have a lot of people in real life that I can say like, oh my gosh, did you see the news? I'm feeling really heartbroken about this. Or have you found any ways to help? I don't really do that in real life. And yet it's all you see online. So I almost feel like I would feel better if that balance tipped a little bit. And there was, you know, Brian and I talk about stuff and it's not, I don't know if it's avoidance or if people are so tired of seeing every angle played out online that then when they get around real life friends, even close friends, they're just like, I'm tired of that. I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about our kids or something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I feel like we didn't outline this on purpose, right?
Yeah.
Because we just wanted to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And I think what we're unpacking here is that this is deeper and more complicated than because this is deeper and more complicated than any of us are capable of figuring out.
Yeah.
Because it's all complicated and compounded by the quickness of the way things move and the, like you said, the way the communication's happening and the expectations on all of us. And I've got very politically outspoken friends, and I like that about them, and not just politically, but just, you know, people who rally behind this cause or another, and some who are just in general outraged by the way things are right now.
Right.
And I appreciate all of that, but my outrage meter isn't always as finely tuned as theirs, or sometimes it just takes mine a while to pick something up, or sometimes I get outraged about something that other people aren't. And I think what's really frustrating right now is like everyone's expected to know everything at all times because it's kind of like it's actually very comparable to like newborn parenting. Mm-hmm. Like we can't all care equally about breastfeeding and diapering and car seat brands.
But you don't want to be the one who says, I don't know, or I don't care. Like nobody wants to be the one that says I'm unsure, or
I haven't even thought about it. Or honestly, I'm already thinking about these other things so much. I don't have room to think about all these things.
Right.
And then when it comes to, I did an episode with, Aaron Lochner
yes,
a while ago. Gosh, it's been probably
6 months.
Yeah. I remember talking to her about like, how do you stay compassionate and acknowledge that you cannot care about everybody in the world on a personal level. And that sounds terrible. Like that sounds really, really crass. And I don't mean for it to,
I know what you mean.
What I mean is the human brain is literally only capable of managing, I think the number that I've heard thrown out is like 150 relationships. After 150, that's it. You really can't, there's no room in your brain to actually care personally about more than that. And that almost feels like a lot to me.
Right.
Says the person with like 2000 Facebook friends, but only, you know, maybe 100 of which I actually interact with. So that's interesting too.
Yeah.
It our worlds have grown so much that when you hear about something happening to someone that you either kind of think, you know, or maybe like are just one person removed from, it feels like it should be personal even when it's not. And it's hard to kind of figure out how much to care about individuals who are almost in your sphere, but not quite. And then compare that against like sort of like the greater humanity.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'm just like not helping at all.
No. But. And in that, like, as I'm listening to you in that, there's also like the little old thing, like taking care of yourself, which we haven't even like in
we
the last
15
minutes have like not even mentioned that. So I want to give a shout out to Asha and Christine of the Edit Your Life show. I listened to their episode from this past week, which is on very similar stuff. And Asha talked about, and she credited others for, you know, having this idea as well, but we tend to get this idea that it's not okay to have joy or laugh or be excited about something in the future when the world is in these super, super bleak times. And again, I think it's another thing that social media makes weird, right? Like if everyone is just heartbroken over the events of the day, are you allowed to post something funny? Like, I mean, these are things that for better or for worse, we think about. And I love
and no one agrees on that.
And
that
no
makes
one
even more difficult because then you're still going to hear the opinions of everyone, whether they agree with you or not.
Right.
And it's all going to seem equally important.
Right. And it's so we're so afraid of seeming as though we're disrespecting the mourning or the heartbreak that's happening when, in fact, and this is what Asha's point was in their episode, the joy and sorrow not only can happen within the same person at the same time, they probably should. Like no one, it's not physically healthy to be all sad all the time, even when the world is like it is right now.
Right.
And I think small children are actually a pretty good reminder of that because if you're like me and your kids are young enough, you're not probably telling them or sharing them with them everything that's happening in the world anyway. So you've got to kind of hide it, number one, kind of put on a happy face, number two. And number three, they still have to have bedtime stories and lunches packed. And so they do kind of force you, which I think is a burden. It can be a burden on moms to have to do that. And I think that's why we need support and we need time when we can talk about this stuff. But the upside maybe is that kids still are funny and they say funny things. Yeah. And so laughter and joy and self-care and taking a break from worry is also
okay. And just
having
to put one foot in front of the other and do stuff. Like you still have to go about your life. Like you can't shut it down just because this isn't going away. I don't really see us like suddenly everything turning around in the next couple of months. I mean, so in the meantime, there are dishes to be done and children to be raised. And
there's also fun to be had, honestly. Yep. Like I don't think, and that's where I think we get really afraid of like doing or saying the wrong thing, you know, like, but you know, it's going to be Halloween soon and we're going to celebrate and it's going to be the holidays and we're going to, you know, do fun things with our families. And I think it's possible to have that be okay and not have that mean that we're somehow turning a blind eye. Does that make sense?
Right.
So it's like, I think we've become so conscientious that we all of a sudden have the ability to analyze whether like what amount of fun and funny is okay for me to have today before it crosses over into, you know, not caring about what I'm supposed to care about, which is like, it's a weird place to be.
It makes me think of the times in my life when things really badly have happened, like when both my parents died at different times and just bad things. And in the midst of that, you do find reasons to, like there's something really great about a funeral, even though it's terrible, but you're together with your family and friends and people laugh and it feels good to see those people again. And it's like when the crisis is personal, you allow yourself those little moments of joy and happiness because you know that you have to. And there's no way to get through it without it.
And you're giving yourself a break from your personal. Right. Oh, that's so interesting. But when it's
not personal, then you don't feel like you can do that. And I think that you have to remember, like, what would someone do in this situation?
I mean,
what would, you know, I think Karen Walrond is a great example of someone. She has on our network has the Make Light podcast. Her house was completely flooded in Harvey.
It's gone. Like her house is basically needs to be totally torn down. Yeah.
Like gutted. And she posted very funny things during that time. And, you know, that was her levity was her way of, you know, I'm sure part of her way of getting through it. And also, I don't know, just like being herself. And I think that, you know, when you look to people like that and there's a million other of them, I'm sure, who find that levity in the face of really hard times. And it's okay for us to do the same. I wouldn't do it at anyone's expense.
Sure.
Or like if someone was personally going through a crisis, I'm not going to like start, you know, posting jokes on their wall.
Right.
But I think it's still okay for us to live our lives and find joy and laugh and have a good time. And it's life. I mean, life is tricky and full of bad and good stuff.
Yeah. And I think probably it sustains us in the long haul to allow for that duality rather than like, you know, wallow in one or escape to the other. Does that make sense? Like, I think, I don't know that, but it feels like it's probably better practice to get good at experiencing joy and sorrow together than feeling like it's got to be one or the other. So.
Right. Because that's not natural. And that's not how life works.
Exactly.
Sarah, our sponsor, Hiya Health, makes a kid's daily multivitamin that parents can feel great about giving their kids because they have no added sugars or dyes. And our kids who have tried Hiya vitamins have loved them. Which is important, right? Because what good is a bottle of vitamins that your kid won't take?
Hiya was founded by two dads who didn't like the ingredients label on some of the popular children's vitamins they were seeing on store shelves, so they got to work developing a formula that would help fill the most common nutrient gaps in modern kids' diets. Hiya's chewable kids' vitamin is made with a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables and then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals. They're also vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free.
Hiya manufactures their vitamins right here in the USA with globally sourced ingredients, and then they ship their chewable vitamins directly to your door on a pediatrician-recommended schedule. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. You're going to get 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, go to hiyahealth.com/momhour. This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to hiyahealth.com/momhour and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
Okay, Megan, like many of our listeners, I'm sure, I've been doing some spring cleaning in my closet lately, and it always feels so good to get rid of clothes I'm not wearing, things that don't fit or that aren't my style anymore. But you know what I realized? All of my Vionic shoes are always in the keep pile. They just tick all the boxes. They're cute, comfy, high quality. They last forever. And I love growing my Vionic collection, especially with the latest styles from their Vionic Vitals collection.
The Vionic Vitals collection offers daily wear styles designed for elegance, comfort, and versatility. We both love the Uptown Loafer, which collapses flat, so it's perfect for travel. The Chardonnay heeled sandal, which I know you love, Sarah. The Walk 23 classic sneaker, which our team member Katie gets compliments on all the time. And the Willa slip-on flat, one of my favorites, which comes in 12 colors for any outfit.
Yeah, I need to get the Willa slip-on flat. That's next on my list. Well, listeners, if you're ready to try the shoes we're always raving about, use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's one-time use only. Vionic shoes, wearable well-being for your feet.
All right.
So should we talk about taking care of yourself? Would this be a good segue?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about taking care of ourselves. And then let's talk about helping and how to know how to help. And oh my gosh, that's like an overwhelm all in and of itself. Yeah. So yeah, I think those are two great things to focus on. So,
well, you know how we talked, I know this is maybe goes in what we were just talking about with the media, like how to kind of manage your media intake. Mm-hmm. One thing I did, I just subscribed a couple weeks ago to the Sunday New York Times, like the physical form. We talked about that. We talked about doing that back in our episode about, what episode was that when we talked about media?
I think it was like our second or third episode ever. So most of these people probably have not heard it. Yeah, it was about just your media diet in general and having quality physical media and not just on the screen. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been meaning to subscribe to a Sunday paper for a long time. And I think even at that time, maybe I like was right in the process of doing it and then just didn't follow through, didn't click submit. Who knows? Maybe I didn't have my credit card on me at the time. But I just decided, like, enough is enough. I'm doing it. So I did. And that was because I think I really wanted to read a lot of their articles. And, you know, I think there's, like, you can read six before you have to start paying or something. And I thought, I should be supporting this media. I consume it a lot.
Yeah.
And I liked the idea of sitting down and reading a physical paper. So I did subscribe. But the funny thing is, so I got it last Sunday. And then by the time I realized, I didn't even, like, you know, they wrap it up in a blue plastic bag. And it was just in my yard. And I just totally thought it was like the junk paper that, like with the coupons in it. And I didn't even register what it was until a day or two later. And then it was like, oh my gosh. So I stuck it on my counter and I had a really busy week and I just didn't read it. So I'm reading last week's Sunday New York Times today and have one waiting for me now for next week. And I think I'm going to purposely read them like a week late.
Well, I do something kind of similar. I get the LA Times. That's our sort of local market. And I, for a while when I started getting it, I felt great and I was reading a lot of it. Then we got out of the habit and I started to feel like it was a waste. And I was like, I came very close to canceling because I just felt like I wasn't reading it. Some weeks it just went into the recycling without being opened. Other times I'd open it and kind of lay out the sections and then never get to it. And then somewhere like, you know, two, three months post-election, I just started feeling like, to me, it's worth it to spend a little bit of money on journalism, real journalism. And even if all I'm doing is sort of voting with my dollars, that quality journalism still can exist. And I'm not here to debate LA Times or New York Times or, again, not something I know enough about, but like that properly trained journalists are reporting on stories and publishing them in a newspaper felt somehow like, okay, I can get behind that. And so I gave myself permission, like, even if I don't read it, I feel good about paying for it. And that's actually been a good place to be, because I was like you, I would get behind and then I would start to like feel guilty or like this isn't what I wanted. But now I've just decided paying for it is the piece that I want, and then reading it is like the bonus. Does that make sense? It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And then you feel better about when you click through and read them online, which honestly is probably what I'll end up doing more of the time anyway. But the other thing I liked about this though is like I kind of love that I'm reading old news.
Yeah.
Because it kind of forces me to realize things don't change that fast typically.
Yes.
And I don't have to have an opinion about something just because there's up to the hour coverage of it.
I don't
have to know about it right now. It will keep, like, everything that's happening will still be happening. Everything that happened today will be relevant in a week. Like, there's no reason for me not to slow down with the way I consume things. And honestly, I think sometimes something that happened a week ago needs more attention because things move so fast. You forget, like, things, there will be something like major that happens and we all pay attention to it for a day. And then it gets pushed aside because something shinier happens. And where is the time to dig in to, you know, these... stories like the Harvey Weinstein one, which is huge. And I agree, it's shocking. And although it sounds like maybe not that shocking, it's still kind of on this level of those of us not in Hollywood going, what? Like, how is this happening for all these years? But that totally eclipsed news that's actually affecting people, like people, like many, many, many thousands or millions of people who are nameless and don't live in Hollywood and aren't in movies. And because this other piece of news is sexier and it's about famous people and we can't help but be super into famous people, we just kind of like, it just overtook everything. So I like the idea that, you know, when I open the paper and look at it from last week, it's not going to be full of that stuff. Although I think that news maybe broke early this week. I feel like last week's paper is probably going to be more hurricane related and stuff like that. So it's just, I don't know.
I agree. No, I agree. And I also find that my attention span is different when I read something printed. And that's true for books. That's why I read physical books and not.
Yeah.
And so I find myself getting more into an article on something that I probably would have clicked away from online, which is one thing. But the other thing I want to speak to, when I talked about taking a long social media and news media break after the election, when I started coming back, I will say that that is one thing that I do think was very clear right away, is that I can have a digest, whether it's reading the paper once a week or like NPR has their Up First podcast, which is only 12 minutes long. And I think the New York Times has something comparable where it's once a day and it's only 10 or 12 minutes and that's all you get. And just like you said, not, we don't have to have minute by minute updates. Like, there is some value in either digesting something a week later in long form, or even just having a daily digest. And that was easier for me to wade back in than, like we talked about earlier, trying to understand all the things all the time at every minute, which is impossible. I don't know. Is that even about helping ourselves?
No,
but it is.
Really,
it is about protecting ourselves from media overwhelm and saturation. I remember when I interviewed Jennifer Freed for one of our episodes, and I interviewed her about talking to kids about tragic events, and I will link to that in the show notes. But she started right with the adults, which is we have control over how much and when we consume our media, and it sounds so simple, but I remember being like, oh, and this was a pre-election. So I was actually like consuming a ton of media every minute from like every source. And she said, you know, she recommends that people pick one time a day and one source. So you read, you know, you read one news source once a day and that's your media diet. And we have the ability to, I mean, it seems like it's hard to avoid, but there's some agency in there that we're probably forgetting that we have. Like, you don't have to consume it at the rate that you probably are. I don't know. It's good food for thought. Any other, we've talked a lot about self-care on our podcast. Anything else come to mind for you in terms of this type of stuff?
No, I just think just keep moving. I think just stick to your routine. What makes you feel healthy and good. And if that's like exercise and eating well and taking time for yourself and, you know, reading to your kids and all of those things, like they all need to, those things need to continue happening. However you can make them happen and not just to fall into this news cycle or these feelings of being overwhelmed or helpless to the point that we're not putting one foot in front of the other. Right. We've said that now several times.
Right.
But I just think, you know, and certain things are going to also affect certain people in very personal ways and others won't. Like, there's people who are going to be listeners of ours who are going to be very deeply affected by the Weinstein case, and others who will look more at it like, wow, this is terrible, I can't believe this was happening, but not have that same personal connection. Same with hurricanes and natural disasters, same with racial issues, and same with shootings. Like, everyone's going to feel things differently, and if it's something that you feel like really deeply connected to, I think it's okay to like fall apart a little bit and just I don't want to use the word wallow, but your reaction can be much more personal. I think the problem is when we take everything equally personally, when we absorb everything equally personally, because we can't, for reasons we've already said.
No, I totally agree. The only other thing I would add on the self-care is I think finding people in real life to talk to, whether it's your spouse or a friend, and just like, just be able to say the things that are going on, like, this, this was a tough day. And again, like I said in the first segment, I feel like a lot of people do that online and we read a lot of it. And then sometimes we forget to say those things or have those conversations in real life. And those are the ones that I think are probably more nurturing self-care wise than the way it sometimes plays out online. Just a thought. I know I could be better about that. I tend to get to the end of the day and feel like I've processed the events of the day. And then I realize I've only consumed or maybe shared or liked something online, but I haven't even touched base with my spouse about like, oh, my gosh, did you hear what's happening? You know, right. And I think that that gets out of whack sometimes for me. So,
yeah.
OK, well, let's spend a little bit of time talking about how to help and how to know how to help and how to wade through all this. I think I'm going to point back again to the Edit Your Life show because I just listened to this. Asha and Christine talk about it. And Asha's become really involved in community organizing and had some suggestions. And I'll just point listeners to that episode and to their show notes. But one thing that I have just gotten more free with is just donating small amounts of money at a time. Again, I used to fall into that trap of feeling like, well, now I've got to research all of the charity options. Yep. I've got to find out, you know, which one, like I donated to the Red Cross after the very beginning of Hurricane Harvey. And then there were all these links saying why you shouldn't donate to the Red Cross. And I was like, well, I didn't know. Like, you know, so I think I've just sort of let go of the need to have the perfect charitable donation and instead giving smaller dollar amounts to the ones that speak to me in that moment and not thinking, well, now I'm going to look at this with my budget and the end of the year and the giving strategy. And all those are good things. But my fear was that I wasn't going to do it at all. And so a couple of things. I did American Red Cross right at the very beginning of the hurricanes. I then did something that Brené Brown posted on her social media, which was underwear, actually, because shelters don't, I mean, you're not going to give out used underwear. So new packaged underwear was actually one of the highest needs they had in Houston with the flooding victims. Okay. And there were ways to just literally send clean men's, women's, children's. And so I did that. And then again, I saw another headline that said, you know, no one should be donating products. What these organizations need is money. And it's like you can't win. And then I donated to, I'll have to look up which one, but some Puerto Rico relief efforts. And none was a very big donation. And to me, that has felt easier than like trying to figure out the right one. So
I agree. And I've even like now let myself get to the point where if I'm at Walgreens or like Wendy's and they're like, hey, do you want to donate a buck or whatever to this? I'll just say who's the recipient of the money. And if they just say something, some organization I've heard of, which if it's a big chain, it's always going to be something you've heard of, I'll usually just be like, yeah, okay. I mean, and if I don't feel like in the moment that I want to, I just say no thanks. Like I'm really trying to remove all the feelings of guilt or I don't know, should around that. Like I should, obligation. Thank you. Like I'm obligated now to research. I'm obligated to sit here and think about how much I can spare at this moment while I'm buying a junior cheeseburger. I mean, I just, you know, if it feels right to do it, I do it. And I've also heard both things, like give cash, but don't give cash to your Red Cross because it doesn't get used well, but give cash to United Way. Don't give cash to this. Like, or give product, don't give product. I just feel like if we're spreading ourselves around, if we're all doing something and giving something in some way, then it adds up and it's making a difference.
It hopefully does. And I definitely don't want to advocate being like careless or blind with your giving.
Right.
I just, for me, it would become a sticking point to where I wouldn't do anything. And I feel like the speed at which a lot of this is coming our way. This is just a small example, but I heard a lot about giving blood after the Las Vegas shootings. And this is a dumb question, but I a lot of the focus was on people in Nevada and the Las Vegas area. And then I started seeing that people anywhere around the country were giving blood. And I have O negative, which is a really like high demand. I'm special. And so is Brian. We both are. And so then I was like, wait, I didn't realize my blood was needed. Like, and then I didn't do anything because I never did figure out like, you know, so I don't know. It's just an example of like, to me, whatever I can do in that moment with of course, proper research, but without letting the research get in the way of doing something.
Oh, yes, exactly. I don't want to advocate either just being mindless about anything. But there comes a point where being too mindful can get in the way of doing anything at all. And I think that it's like, there's a middle ground.
Yeah, I think so. I really like the emails that Kristen and Liz of Cool Mom Picks send out with ways to help. They've been doing this, unfortunately, a lot because there's lots of needs. Mm-hmm. And their emails and their, I mean, they post them on their website as well, but they're just really simple. And I trust their, you know, they are moms and, you know, so some, a lot of the time it has to do with moms, babies, children, but not always. I mean, we are all humans and want to help other humans. So that's one source I would recommend. I mean, of course, there's like the big watchdogs and the charity navigators and those types of things. But again, am I going to go down that rabbit hole of research or am I going to trust someone I trust? And
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't want to sound too woo woo about this, but I also think this is a good time to think about your local community, because even if your local community isn't in need right now, did we even mention, like, by the way, the wildfires? I don't think we even talked about that.
Oh yeah. My state's on fire. I forgot to mention about that. So the northern part of my state is local. It is. Yeah. So the really, really catastrophic and like record setting fires are up north in Napa and Sonoma counties in Northern California, which is far from me. But we had wildfires in Orange County last week that were because all the state resources were up north. The fires spread and nothing that compares to up north, but damages. I mean, there was evacuations and homes were lost and things happened right here in Orange County. There was also a small shooting in my town last week.
Right.
So there's like things that I didn't even mention that piled
on.
But yes,
it's
fire.
Yeah, it's all adding up.
Fire.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I guess to my point then, you know, if you continue helping out people in your neighborhood, even if there's not a crisis in your own community and staying involved locally and staying abreast of what's happening locally, it's just so much easier to digest and actually make a difference and get involved in. And I do feel like there is a ripple effect, and I do feel like it makes a difference. Like everything you do on a local level affects like the greater.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know, the greater consciousness, and that's the woo-woo part of what I'm getting at. But
so I know you think you work in local radio, and you also live in a small town. Do you feel like it's pretty easy to be dialed into what's happening locally just because you've lived there a while and the people you're connected to?
It is. Well, it depends what you're talking about, like as far as happening.
I guess I just mean like you said, staying connected to your local community, things, you know, ways to help or things that are going on. I sometimes find that most of my media sources are national, and I live in this very sprawling suburban area where one town bleeds into the next. And like it can actually feel kind of hard to think locally, whether you're trying to find like a restaurant or help out in a cause. It can be difficult, I think.
So. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Here it's like it's not necessarily coming through the media. It's honestly like just look around. You can see it. It's so small.
Yeah.
And we know what the needs are here. I mean, it's obvious. And it's almost like word of mouth. It's a very different environment because you're not segregated here so much by socioeconomic because it's small. And so everyone is everyone's neighbor. And, you know, it's you can be. I mean, it's easy to live in a bubble here if you want to.
Right.
But it's also really easy not to.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it's a little the area I live in is pretty unique in that way. I think for you, you probably would have to be tied in with some kind of organization or, you know, really, or reading like community newspapers.
Yep.
I know like neighborhoods have newspapers and small communities have news. And those ones, I think, are the ones that tend to tackle like what happened at the city council meeting last night or what happened at, you know, this zoning meeting. And that's how you kind of find out.
I feel like even being part of our school community, because it's a new school and it's drawing from different parts of Orange County, but it tends to draw very like civically minded and involved people because it takes a lot of work to found a charter school. So even something as small as that, I do feel more connected locally than I did before we were at that school, because I just think there's, like you said, word of mouth and just being nearby people who might be more civically minded or just even been in the area. I haven't been in the area all that long, so I was just curious how that worked. I don't know how much more I have to say on knowing how to help, except that whatever you're doing is okay. And it's one of those things, like when we say take the long view, I know I always say that all the time, but I feel like, yes, like what you said, if you're taking care of your neighbor, if you are doing what's right in your local community, it's okay to pick and choose the causes that feel right to you or that are okay financially to throw some money into right now. We can't all do everything. And I think it's easy to feel helpless, but every little, that's so cheesy, every little thing helps, but you know, it's okay. Whatever you can do.
And I think that one thing that's really helped me, because when we think about helping, we also think about speaking out. And I know that that's something that right now is becoming, I feel, very important. Like, I look around and say, there's things happening right now that aren't not okay. And at what point do I speak out? And I think to kind of circle back to what we said early in the conversation, for me, the way I have chosen to do that is to pick things that I feel that I can speak, not only in a knowledgeable way about, or at least where my opinion feels like something I can stand strongly behind, but also where in a way where I feel like my words will have impact, considering my audience, which is really diverse and really, you know, some people it's preaching to the choir. Some people are going to be receptive to what I'm saying, but not really believe it. And some people are going to be very closed off to what I'm saying. So how do I structure something I say in a way that it's not just me showing the world I have an opinion? Cause we can all do that. Like, look at me, you know,
I can
retweet and repost snarky articles too, but there's so much of that now and there's so much noise. Like, how do you make your words have impact? And I think for me, the way that is choosing what I say carefully, thinking on it if necessary, choosing the arguments I decide to wade into really carefully, and not jumping on everything, because if I do that, I just become noise and I can't, then I just become like an outrage machine.
Right.
And I don't want to be that, because I don't think it's helpful.
I think you're really good at that from my perspective. I see you doing that and I really admire it. It's a little bit like what we've said to writers, which it's easy for writers to think everything's been said, and it's easy to feel like your opinion in this oversaturated opinion land is one thing. But I think you're so right that we each have a different audience and we don't know what our words are, where they're going to land. And if they are true, and like you said, carefully chosen, that is absolutely a way to contribute to the conversation in a meaningful way. And I think you do it really well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
It's not always easy. And no. I'm sure I screw it up sometimes, but you know,
but you're okay saying too. Something. So, okay. Well, let's invite our listeners to continue this conversation, because it is not an easy one and we by no means can put a bow on it like we sometimes say.
Yeah.
So we'd love to get your comments on the show notes at themomhour.com. This is episode 124. Would love to hear your thoughts, ways that you are contributing, ways that you feel overwhelmed, ways that you are taking care of yourself in the face of everything that's going on. If you are affected significantly in the ways we talked about, I mean, we're all affected, but if your, you know, homeland is on fire or underwater, or you have been otherwise traumatized by all this, we are just thinking of you and our hearts are with you. And I know that, you know, our listeners are such a great community that, you know, people are sending that love to each other, even without knowing each other. So, all right. Anything else from your end, Megan?
No, I think that that's a big topic that, you know, honestly, I could probably talk all day and be less and less helpful the more I talked.
Yeah. So, no.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, we will be back with you next week. And again, everything we talked about and more is at themomhour.com, episode 124.
Guess what, Megan? Over 10,000 teens are already using our sponsor, Erica, to help them unplug.
That is amazing. Erica, that's Erica with a K, is the social media health app for teens that gives them the tools to unplug whenever they need to for improved health, study focus, sleep, and daily balance. It's so cool how this works to hide distracting apps from your phone at the touch of a button, keeping them out of sight and out of mind without deleting your data.
Yeah, you know, teens really get that social media comes with risks, including addiction. And Erica helps them build healthy habits and self-regulation that will benefit them their whole lives. Tell your teens about Erica and save 20% on the Erica family plan with promo code TheMomHour. Go to erica.app and search for plans. That's Erica with a K, Erika.app, and use code TheMomHour to save 20%. The Mom Hour is brought to you by partners like Chatbooks. Chatbooks makes it beyond easy to create beautiful photo books by importing your digital photos from anywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Google Photos, or directly from your phone. The books come in a variety of sizes with beautiful cover options and binding styles to choose from, and they start at just $15. Plus, we have a great deal just for our listeners. Use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20% off your purchase. Just download the Chatbooks app and use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20%.